I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Phoenix, Arizona, editor of Veterans Today, Mike Harris, and out of St. Petersburg, Florida, Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off with Mike. Give me your overall analysis of the results of this midterm election, because on the one hand, the Democrats have taken control of the House, and on the other hand, the Senate has increased the number of Republican senators.
Well, it's obvious there was no blue wave, more like a blue trickle. So the Democrats did gain control of the House. They have 4 over what they require, but it doesn't matter if you're 1 over or if you're 100 over, they still have control. Now, it's going to be interesting to see how the Democrats use their authority that they've gained. But, you know, the blue wave we were anticipating didn't happen. They were expecting a shellacking for the Republicans, and it didn't happen. And if you look at the House versus the Senate is a far more an important body than the House is. They're both very important, but the Senate is where we can get conservative judges through and get cabinet appointments, and anything that requires Senate approval goes to the Senate, and that is firmly Republican now. So that
is
a good thing for Donald
Trump.
It
did not happen. You talked about the blue wave. Sorry, you talked about the blue wave and expectations. Why do you think that that did not happen?
Well, a number of reasons. Part of it is the hostility on the side of the left, the Democrats. Their violence, their attempts to intimidate Republican lawmakers, stalking them in restaurants and all that nonsense. But I think the big thing was the Kavanaugh confirmation, when the Democrats went totally off the rails. And really, the unfounded allegations against what appears to be an innocent man were just beyond the pale. Americans still stick with the premise of innocent until proven guilty. We do not follow the Napoleonic Code. And the way the Democrats conducted themselves, all the Democrats who voted against Kavanaugh confirmation were defeated. The one who voted for the Kavanaugh confirmation was retained. So I think that says a lot right there.
Okay. Well, let me get Scott in on this discussion. Scott, would you say that the United States is a very divided country at this point in time?
Well, the United States has been divided for some time. Actually, it's not something new. It's been divided between the right and the left wing since the earlier 1900s and even the 1800s. The Native Americans used to say that there was really no difference, actually, between the left and the right wing. They said two wings of the same bird. That's absolutely true. The division is by design. If you look at the work by Edward Bernays and the work that was done basically manipulating our societies and using media to control our societies, not just in the United States but elsewhere throughout the world, Edward Bernays's book, Propaganda, was used very effectively in Nazi Germany under Goebbels, and also in the former Soviet Union as it formed under Stalin. So the methods in which the divisions are deliberately made are absolutely working. They're working as designed. The left and the right continue to fight with each other, while the oligarchs and the financial, military, industrial complex and the real rulers of the United States continue to place their puppets as our leadership, and unfortunately, people fall for this. It's been going on for some time. The passion behind their parties, their respective parties, is just ridiculous, and the arguments are just absolutely non-productive.
So basically, Scott, you're just saying that all of this is a game.
No, not a game at all. It's by design. This is an absolute design that was used for centuries. You look at the way that people hire other mercenary groups. The Americans worked alongside many mercenary groups in the history of the United States. Certainly, the British Empire has done it as well. And by design, they absolutely divide the countries in which they're trying to either control or conquer by putting in their puppets. And that's absolutely what's happened in the United States. These are puppets of the financial infrastructure. They're puppets of also the lobbies. Obviously, the pro-Israel lobby controls individuals in both parties.
Okay. Well, Mike, when we look at the situation, this election has been greatly politicized. It politicized the American society, which generally has been pretty much an apolitical society. Do you think that Trump has totally changed political vibes in the U.S. society? And what does it mean in general for the country?
Well, I think that what Trump has done has brought into focus the efforts of the globalist. Now, Trump came out a week or so ago and said he is a nationalist. He's a financial a nationalist. He wants good for the American people. He wants what's in our best interest. The globalist got back on stage with the election of the Democrat Party to the House Congress. So, really, what we have to look at here is who is for more empowerment of the American people, more freedom, more economic prosperity, versus who is for more corporate profits and greater profitability for the large corporations. Scott Ricker made a very good point that we are controlled by the oligarchs, and what the goal stated here is to drive down the cost of American labor so it's competitive with that of China. And so that's what they're doing. That's what's been going on. And so it's time to put on a different lens is how you look at politics, not left or right, but what is for individual freedom and prosperity versus what is for oppression and poverty. And if you change the lens, your perspectives on what's going on within the American system will change radically.
Well, Mike, you say that, of course, and Trump himself calls himself a nationalist and not a globalist, but then we see his international policies being very globalist-like as far as being involved in so many countries in the world. So there seems to be contradiction, actually, on what he really is, because obviously when you have your military all over the world and getting involved in politics all over the world, you're definitely not concentrating on the nation's interests itself, but definitely a globalist, but perhaps from a different perspective than what you're saying.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That's an excellent point, because Trump's biggest failing has been in foreign policy. You know, he committed to the electorate in 2015-16, the campaign cycle, that he was going to get us out of these foreign entanglements. We weren't going to be in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria. And yet, here we are. So, really what needs to happen is we need a complete rebuild of the Department of State. And, you know, that needs to be overhauled. The Department of State has been dysfunctional since Allen Dulles murdered John F. Kennedy in broad daylight. And so it's time to rethink American foreign policy from the ground up and have Trump get on a truly nationalist trajectory. Time to renounce Israel as our best ally, because they have become our best liability. They're no longer an asset to us. They hold us back.
Okay.
And it's really time to rethink these things and do what's in the best good of the American people.
Scott, when we look at this election, and again, it seemed very polarized. How much of race do you think played into all of this? When we look at the divisions in general, we see so many different divisions, but race has always been a very polarizing subject in the United States. Do you think that it still is in 2018?
Well, yes, it's been race, immigration, cultural, religious influences have been an influence not only in the United States, but around the world. If you look at the kinds of immigration issues in the United States, they have to be expected. I mean, when you talk about the Hispanics, obviously the Hispanics were also occupying some Native American lands as well. After they conquered the Native Americans, and certainly the United States conquered the Hispanics, Mexico in particular, and took some of that land as well. So this is a long-standing dispute, obviously, between two neighboring nations. And then, unfortunately, you also had the slave trade. So making up nearly 20 to 25% of the minorities in the United States, you saw a turnout in this election that was 30% of the voters were diversity based. And even 10% of the voters that showed up to this were Hispanic. These are record-breaking numbers. So absolutely, the immigration issue for individuals that are anti-immigration and American, I would say, because immigration is what America is all about. Unfortunately, the flip side of that, occupation and invasion is also what the Americans are all about. We obviously occupied and invaded and took over this country, and unfortunately, we do it in other countries as well. And when you look at the kinds of invasions that are happening in these countries, these are happening by foreigners that have nothing to do with those countries. Look at the work of the Bolsheviks that were done to the, obviously, the Russians, and then obviously to Hitler after World War I. The immigration that happened there from the Poles and the Russians and the Bolsheviks that came. Mm-hmm. I mean, 20% of the society were immigrants. I mean, imagine that over just a few years, the United States growing by 60 million immigrants. You know, this is the kind of rhetoric that Donald Trump is basically scaring the public with. You know, they're making a big deal out of a migration out of Honduras when you're talking only 160 people. I mean, my God, you know, this is not a migration. This is not an invasion. This is a protest to the American hegemony in Central America that unfortunately has been going on since the 1850s under Cornelius Vanderbilt and Franklin Pierce. So this is a sad state of affairs. It's called blowback, and this is not a problem with immigration. It's a problem with American foreign policy.
All right. Well, Mike, what about that? Is a lot of what we're seeing in general inside of the United States reflecting on not only domestic policies by Donald Trump, but also policies outside of the country, as Scott was saying, basically blowback from a lot of the policies of what United States has done elsewhere. We're talking about, as he said, a lot more now people of South American descent getting involved in the election. We saw Muslims actually getting more involved, a couple of Muslim women actually being elected to Congress, of course, after the whole Muslim ban. So how much of this, actually what we're seeing, is reflective of policies that actually Donald Trump has initiated?
Well, there's two aspects to policy. One of them is foreign policy, and the other is domestic policy. As far as foreign policy, that is a long-term strategic set of objectives there. Now, we can go back to United Fruit Company in 1900 and how they toppled governments in Central America in order to put American financial interest in charge, and to the benefit of the American financial interest. So, yes, this is all blowback from that. These are all things that should be left alone. These people should have the right to, free determination by who they elect or what form of government they want to be in. But the United States doesn't seem to have the ability to say hands off and let's just do commerce with them. They want to go in there and stack the deck by putting a puppet dictator in there who will put the interest of the United States financial interest ahead of the indigenous people. That is one of the problems we have with our Department of State. Now, domestic policy is an entirely different issue. We have the right as a people to self-determine. Now, we hear about the illegal immigration problem we have, and we've been using that number of 11 million people for 25 years. The real number is closer to 35 to 55 million people in this country illegally. And they don't want the American people to know this because it would induce panic. Now, we were betrayed by Ronald Reagan when he gave away this first amnesty, and we've had numerous amnesties since then. The American people, we don't want these people here because they lower the wage that the lowest class American workers make. And black America has suffered more than any other racial demographic by this. This is a proven and sustainable fact. So what Donald Trump is trying to do is do things that benefit American workers internally to this country, which is a good first step. But for a longer step, he has to reform foreign policy from the ground up and try to rectify some of these things that have been done going back nearly 100 years now against Central South America and against the Middle East. There's been a number of places where the U.S. has really screwed up. And you look at the migration problems that are happening in Europe as a direct result of the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. And there's no way to put the blame anywhere else except squarely on the U.S. in a flawed foreign policy based on 9/11.
Scott, you're shaking your head. Comments?
So, you know, this sensationalism around immigration and making it a key point, obviously it feeds the unfortunate racist mentalities of the American people. Certainly, many of the individuals that I've met and know have a real problem with other nationalities. And absolutely, you know, if you look at the United States, you know, this is a country that was built on immigration. And the fact is that if the money was diverted away from the corrupt individuals and the corrupt military-industrial complex, this country would have no problem economically taking on more immigrants. But unfortunately, this country spends tenfold any other country on the world on military, and that absolutely provides a prison industrial complex that the world has never seen. The United States actually holds 25% of the world's incarcerated people, but yet we only make up 5% of the world's population. And at the same time, the companies around it, Wackenhut, now called GEO, and Genesis, another conglomerate that makes money hand over fist. My God, the CEO of GEO / Wackenhut makes $5 million a year. And he's the one that's making these detention facilities for the quote-unquote illegal immigrants. And he's making money hand over fist on that. And by the way, his offices are in West Palm Beach, Boca Raton, and I'm very sure he's very good friends with Donald Trump. And
okay,
these are individuals that are making money off of incarcerating the individuals.
Stay with me, Scott.
So
stay with me, Scott, because I'm getting near the end of the program.
A
couple of more
are.
Questions I want to get in here. Mike, do you see this as the beginning of the end to Trump, or are we looking at actually growing appeal for Trump's message?
Oh, I think the appeal for Trump is going to grow exponentially because now the Democrats are going to use their obstructionist policies. You look at what happened to Bill Clinton when they tried to impeach him and how that blew up in the Republicans' face. Clinton came roaring back, very successful. I think they have pre-positioned Trump for a win back in 2020 as well as retaining the House and the Senate. And then his second term is when we're really going to see some meaningful changes take place. Hopefully on the domestic front, and
okay,
really hopefully on the foreign policy front, to where we can undo the last 100 years of bad foreign policy that the U.S. has been engaged in.
All right, and let me get Scott in here. Scott, how do you see the next 2 years playing itself out? Are we going to be just basically very divided and not being able to get anything done? What do you think?
Well, let's be clear, we haven't gotten much done in the last 2 years, and we certainly didn't get much done in the last 10 years under Obama. Anyone with any type of fantasy that believes that either of these parties is going to take us into a better day is absolutely out of their minds. These are two very corrupt political organizations, and these organizations, the only thing that will fix it are the absolute destruction of the political infrastructure and the remaking of a political infrastructure that holds individuals accountable, not just threatening to lock her up, but actually locking individuals up that are acting corruptly. And unfortunately,
that
won't happen because it would be a house of cards.
We will another program, but I have to end thanking both of you for now. Out of Phoenix, Mike Harris, editor of Veterans Today out of St. Petersburg, Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist. And as always, viewers, appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.